welcome to episode 412 of Awards Daily's Water Cooler Podcast. I am Clarence Moy, and I am joined by the other two M's. So M's, let's go around the cooler and tell the listeners who you are and where they can find you on the internet. Megan, of course, we'll start with you this week.
Hi, I'm Megan McLaughlin, and you can find me on Twitter at HeyDudeMeg.
Joey?
Hi, I'm Joey Moser. You can find me on Twitter at JoeyMoser83.
And again, I'm Clarence Moy. You can find me on Twitter at Clarence Moy. I said, of course, Megan, because of our main topic this week, which I, you know, we all three love Showtime's Yellow Jackets, but I do feel like you're like the biggest Yellow Jackets fangirl that I know. And to the point where you're in all the forums. I feel like you've got like a Misty like identity online, and you're like downvoting all these people that you hate.
I have been told that I remind people of Misty, which I do feel like I identify most with her. I don't know what that means. I don't know what that says about me, but
I think you know what it says about you. You just don't want people to say
that. But I kind of like look like her, and especially when I have glasses on and my hair's curly. But yeah, I am in all the message boards and all the. I like to see what people are saying about Yellow Jackets.
Next week, Megan McLaughlin, Yellow Jacket fan fiction. excellent. Well, of course, this week we are talking about the premiere of Yellow Jacket season 2. Now, we have seen, well, some of us have seen 6 episodes. One of us has seen 3, but we're not going to talk about them because we don't want to spoil this show. But what we will talk about is sort of whether or not Yellow Jacket season 2 avoids the dreaded sophomore slump. How it changes from season 1, and kind of what we think its Emmy trajectory will be based on our initial reaction to what we've seen. But before we get into that, we're going to talk a little bit about a couple of random topics. We took last week off because I was personally on vacation, so I was unavailable, and we were kind of in the come down from the Oscars, of course. And we'll catch up to that a little bit. We'll talk about Apple TV's Ted Lasso, which premiered on the 15th of March. And we'll close with a flash forward to the media, which we're most anticipating in the upcoming week. You guys ready?
Yeah.
All right. So let's start with an overview, a review, let's say. Let's start with a review, Megan, of Joey's Oscar party. I don't even know what number this is. I was going to say the 10th annual Oscar party, but I don't even know how many you've had.
That's got to be 15. Right, Joey?
I think it's technically I started Oscar parties in like 2010. So,
but I remember going before that.
Though. Yeah, but it wasn't as like.
Oh, but you went to other people's houses and took over. Yeah. Like my house, like my parents' house.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I did that. Yeah. But I haven't had like a full blowout Oscar party.
You did bring your chart though. Because my family was frightened.
Well, we did like an Oscar party chart at work. And then when everybody turned in their ballot, I would always take little thumbnail size pictures of all the posters for everything. And I would glue them onto the posters.
Yes, that's right.
It was,
But to get back to
this
point,
this is the weekly moment where Megan points out that I'm a little psychotic. So,
This party was probably the most epic I've seen because there were 30 people at his house, including 2 animals and a cat. There were three animals, 2 dogs and a cat, and they had to have it on 2 levels. So they had some people were in the like downstairs family room area watching the Oscars and some people were upstairs. And my favorite part was actually within the first 5 minutes. Is this where you know what I'm going to talk about?
Yeah.
The first 5 minutes, unfortunately in Columbus, there was an Amber Alert. So they cut the screen to blue and I have never seen Joey panic so much. I think he started pacing. He walked away from the living room. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, and he's just like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? I think he went downstairs to see if it was on the same television. And it was also downstairs. But he was in a total panic. I hope that child was returned.
Was.
I never.
Good. The mother and the child were found in a safe somewhere.
Oh. They were safe. Okay. Well, as long as they're safe.
In a safe. Okay. But then there was also a video released by the end of the Oscar night, like when the news came on, of someone sent a video of the child actually being abducted. Like,
oh my.
You see the person like running in the cannon. It's really scary.
Yes. But anyway, yeah, so his party was the most epic. He had great food. I got to help this year, which I was really excited about. I got to use the air fryer and make some cheese sticks. And I only got kicked out once, I think. It was within an hour.
I like the way you say air fryer as if, like, I rented it from a restaurant.
No, but it was like, you never let me do anything. Usually I get yelled at, but I actually had a duty this year. At one point, there was just duty. Like a duty. At one point, there was just like a sink running, which I was laughing about, like just like the faucet, like just on. And it was a little chaotic at the beginning, but it was a great time, and I think people had a good time. I know Mr. Wilson, my dog, and Neville, his dog, seemed to get along okay, so that warmed my heart.
And Jason won the Oscar pool because...
Oh, that's right, you were pissed.
No, I got to keep the money, so I was pissed, it was fine. I did tell him, I was like, well, I guess I can't complain that you never listen to me anymore, because clearly you...
Well, it sounds already like it was
working on another one.
Oh. Sorry, what?
And already tirelessly working on next year's party.
Are you just dreaming of dishes just in case? You know, what will you do for Killers of the Flower Moon?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
I'm seeing a large punch bowl with flowers. No, I'm kidding. I already have an idea what I'm going to do for the physical invitation this year. Locked and loaded. So,
what are you going to do for Air, the Nike movie?
Do you think that's getting nominated for Best Picture?
Do I?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just
if it does, okay. I feel like it's one of those movies that, because there's been a little bit of a drought of like acclaimed cinema, it's getting like maybe a little bit generous of reviews. But we'll see.
And they love Ben Affleck. And my dad, it's like a Ford versus Ferrari. It's a dad movie because my dad's like, I want to see that Air movie. And I'm like, okay. It's like, it's got all my favorite people in it. I'm like, you're right. It does.
Also, like, it's, I think we've, I'm sure it looks good. Like, I'm excited to see it. But I think it's also, we've been talking about the same fucking movies for 8 months. So it's like, something did. Oh my God.
Yeah, I agree.
So what did you guys think of the Oscars? I will say that, I was out of pocket, completely offline. So I did not watch the Oscars for the first time since 1990.
I pictured you in like a triangle of sadness situation where everybody's just vomiting around you.
The thought crossed my mind. Let me tell you, when I was on that boat, the thought crossed my mind.
The ceremony was good. I thought that it was, you know, just your basic Oscar. I mean, I'm glad they brought back all of they showed all of the categories, which I think was important, because it was kind of infuriating last year that it wasn't even a shorter ceremony when they cut out the ones, you know, that we wanted to see. Like all of them, meaning all of them. But I thought it was pretty good. I thought that Jimmy Kimmel did a fine job. I thought that it was really cool the way they had the presenters paired up together to do the like best actor, best actress, like especially for Jessica Chastain and Halle Berry to present to Michelle Yeoh, which I love that moment so much. And I thought, you know, if we didn't have the slap, we wouldn't have had that moment. So it was kind of like a silver lining to last year that we got that. And I really thought that was special, special moment.
Did you see that? That meme that was like, it was the picture of them walking arm in arm together, but someone was just like, oh my God, what a great picture. The first Black woman to win Best Actress, Asian American woman win Best Actress, the first Jessica Chastain to win Best Actress.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, I thought that was funny.
Joey, what did you think? Did you rewatch it the next morning?
I haven't rewatched it yet. I mean, God only knows I will. But which I think now it's just streaming on like HBO Max or Amazon or something. I thought it was. I liked it. I did think that like halfway through there was like a lull.
But I feel like that happens with a lot of ceremonies. And I feel like a lot of the winners really sort of boosted the energy of the actual ceremony. So I feel like it felt like, for the most part, that the Academy did, I'm going to say did everything right, because I'm jinxing kind of would, but you know what I mean? Like, it was like, you know, on the right path for doing something else, like maybe continuing it to next year. I thought it was good. Solid.
Solid B.
Solid B.
All right. Very good. Very good. So moving on to what else premiered this week. So Joey, I know you haven't seen Ted Lasso yet. Megan, have you caught up on with Ted
Lasso? I've seen one episode of Ted Lasso. I'm trying to do it one at a time, since it's, I learned, even though I've watched a lot of Yellow Jackets, I am going to go back and rewatch them probably, as sick as I am. But like Ted Lasso, I'm trying to just do one at a time.
Savor. So,
yeah, that's sick considering Yellow Jacket.
What do you think of season three so far?
I think it's continuing on just the way we want it to. Like, I think it's, I'm still invested. I think it's great. I was reading some interesting articles about how each new season starts like on a face, and that's what, like, the first one was Hannah Waddingham. The second one was Nick Muhammad, and this year it's Jason Sudeikis' face. It was the first one we see, which is interesting. And which I didn't realize that. So that's, I need to go back and watch from the beginning. But I thought that was really interesting. And I did see some other things where people were talking about how watching him dealing with divorce and thinking about real life stuff with him and Olivia Wilde is kind of interesting too. Yes. And I mean, that was in my mind, but I still am able to separate Ted Lasso from Jason Sudeikis. But I do wonder how much it's what goes on in the show is inspired by his real life. And, it's emotional. I think I still really love the show.
I do too. And I'm the only thing that I really don't like about it so far is the separation between Brett Goldstein and Juno Temple.
I that was one thing where I was like, oh, that's what, like, it's just now, like, we've missed the, you know, we kind of had a hint that they might break up last season, but I do feel like that kind of came out of nowhere, and I need to know more, but maybe that's what this season will highlight.
Yeah, it definitely, it's definitely a theme to the whole thing. And of course, as we saw, most of the main cast, or some of the main cast of Ted Lasso, dropped by the White House this week, and talked about mental illness and you know, people, you know, look at, basically with a message of, look at those around you, they may be suffering and you don't know it. And I think that's obviously going to be the theme of the season, and it kind of resonates within the character of Nate the Great. I am four episodes into it. Well, I think we've only got four episodes, but I expect big things from him as the season progresses throughout his arc.
I do too. And I still like, I know we're not supposed to like him, but I just see the pain in that character. Yeah. You really do see it. And he's also still kind of funny. Like, the character's funny too. Like, at the press conference when he's like, getting to know all about you. Like, you know, which I saw somebody write, like, oh, he knows where he's got that sense of humor, like, who appreciates that sense of humor, which is Ted Lasso.
Yeah.
But I also wanted to say that I thought that it was cool that the White House, that they had a Trent Crim was there, from the Independent. He was in the audience, apparently.
Formerly of the Independent, yes, but,
Formerly of the Independent, yes.
Yeah, I thought that was fun. It's remarkable the way, and I think you're absolutely right, the show is very consistent, but they still make it feel fresh to me. I know some people think it's starting to get stale. I find it very fresh. I find, you know, these characters are just such fantastically well written characters, well thought out, well executed characters that I could spend a lot more time with them. Although, to be fair, I am glad that it's supposedly ending after the season. I think it's coming to a reasonable conclusion. So
I heard there might be spinoffs, but I don't know if I want to see that, but but I also wanted piggybacking off of what you just said, even though like, so Brett Goldstein and Juno Temple's characters have seemingly broken up, but that feels like it feels fresh. And that doesn't feel like a thing that they did, the writers did, just to separate them. It did feel like it feels natural, which I think is another thing that the show really does well at, is that the drama that plays out doesn't feel like it's coming out of nowhere.
Agreed. All right. Anything else you guys have seen over the past week? Actually, while you're thinking about that, I do want to say, while I was on the cruise ship, I caught up with two legacy movies that I wanted to, older movies that I,
I caught up with one too, but I want to hear yours, but then I'll tell you what I did.
Well, mine is probably a lot newer than yours because of your affection for older
movies. No, mine's newer. Okay, mine's newer.
I saw Steven Spielberg's Catch Me If You Can, which I liked on initial release, and I think it's better with time. I would recommend that people go back, after seeing The Fabelmans, go back and watch Catch Me If You Can. Because I think that I can see why Steven Spielberg directed this movie, because it is essentially, there's a lot of parallels between that and The Fabelmans.
That's really interesting.
And I saw, because I finished the book Oscar Wars, I watched Shakespeare in Love again since I saw it. I think it's the first time I've seen it since I saw it in the theater. And super cute movie. I can absolutely see why it won Best Picture. I still, to this day, think that Gwyneth Paltrow does not deserve that Oscar.
Wait, who would you have given to? Cate Blanchett?
Cate Blanchett for Elizabeth.
Oh, I completely disagree, but that's a whole other podcast.
Disagree?
I disagree. I love Gwyneth Paltrow in that movie.
I don't think she's very good, actually.
Maybe I should watch it, and I'll be the deciding factor.
You know, what
to be a tiebreaker.
I mean, she's fine. She's fine. I just don't think she's doing anything unusual. I also got really annoyed with every time she goes, "I love your poetry. Your poetry is amazing, William Shakespeare. I love your poetry."
You kind of sound like, why did a lot of your accents sound like Dieter from SNL? pet my monkey. I love your poetry.
I do.
You're getting.
I do love Dieter.
Which is also your, what's her name?
Anna.
Yeah.
I just have a great Euro trash act. No, I'm kidding. but Shakespeare in Love is just, it's a really funny movie too. It's quite good. And Ben Affleck is really great in it too. He probably should have gotten a nomination for Best Supporting Actor. Cause he's just so hammy and in a great way. But what did you catch up to?
So I finally, after, a lot of Angela Bassett talk, I wanted to watch What's Love Got to Do with It, but I couldn't find it on streaming, but I did find How Stella Got Her Groove Back, which I've been dying to watch. And it's not that good. I was really disappointed. I mean, she's great in it. Taye Diggs is great in it, but it's kind of disappointing. And I was really bummed about that, because I always thought that my memory of it was that it would be better. Like, maybe because it was in our pop culture lexicon. I mean, I always think about the Friends line where they're like, "What are you doing? Stella's getting her groove back in about 20 minutes." Like, meaning like, we got to get going. And I don't know. I thought that it would take place like at a vacation, where the vacation changes her life. But then she just keeps going back and forth to Jamaica the whole time to spend time with this guy who I think she just wanted to hook up with. I don't think there was anything there like serious, but I don't know. Have you guys ever seen it?
I have not.
No.
No. Wow. Okay.
I don't think anyone ever, I never thought, my memory of it was never that it was a good movie, but it was just.
Not that it was a good movie, but I thought that it would have like some sort of like, oh, like this is watchable and like a cult following type of thing. No. I'm trying to think of a good example. Okay. What's Your Number? Like, that's a movie that's fun. That's not really great, but it's like easy to watch and kind of has like a cult Like, I feel like people like to watch it and enjoy it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I don't think anybody talks about Stella that way. I think people talk more about Waiting to Exhale that way.
Yes, yeah. And that I've seen bits and pieces of, and I would like to watch the whole thing. But I remember I was like a kid at the time when it came out. But yeah, so that's what I watched.
Nice. Well, should we jump to Yellow Jackets, or did you guys have anything else that you wanted to bring up?
No.
In our little potpourri. okay. Well, Megan, lead us down the dark, twisted road of Yellow Jacket season two.
Sure. So season two picks up 2 months after the events of the season one finale, where, can I spoil season one, I guess? What happens at the end? If you're a Yellow Jackets devotee, Jackie has been given the cold shoulder, so to speak. I like how that's what they wrote in the description. Well, Shauna gives Jackie the cold shoulder, and Jackie unfortunately dies of hypothermia outside when she falls asleep, and it's tragic. Season two picks up 2 months after that. I don't want to spoil too much of what's going on there, but the winter has set in, and they're starving. And back in the present day, Shauna realizes her daughter's kind of on her trail when it comes to what happened to her lover, Adam. And Misty is looking for Natalie, who was kidnapped at the end of last season. And Thaisa is also wondering why her wife is suddenly terrified of her. And that kind of brings us up. Oh, and also Natalie is been kidnapped, and we get to meet Lottie, adult Lottie, which was very exciting. And that brings us up to date to the first episode of the second season.
God, I can't believe you spoiled that. Jesus.
And somebody somewhere is like, what? I didn't know there was an adult Lottie.
Yes, please don't look at Wikipedia.
I know, right?
Or anything. If you Google Yellow Jackets, my God, like it's been up there.
So
I really loved the first episode. I was hooked right away. And without spoiling the final moment of the episode, I literally gasped out loud. Like, I was like, yeah.
I think you did a lot of gasping, I suspect.
Yes, throughout the whole thing, yes.
we're trying to avoid spoilers here, but without going into spoiler territory, what are some of your favorite things about this season? Kind of, you know, talk in sort of abstracts, if you can.
I think that you can see the writers and Ashley Lau and Bart Nickerson are really like moving the puzzle pieces that they placed in season one, and they're kind of coming together. And like you can see that what they set up in season one, they're following through with, and they're not taking their time getting there. I've seen some reviews say it was tedious, but I don't think it's tedious at all. Maybe I know, Clarence, you might have a different opinion on the first couple episodes, but I was like, whoa, they're going into this right away. And I think that I think one of the things the show really does well is it like really utilizes this ensemble, that everybody gets to shine. I know there are some people some critics who don't believe this, but I do think everybody gets something to do. Everybody is able to shine. And that's amazing considering how expansive this cast is. And they're all really good, including the teen actors. It's just really impressive, and there's a lot going on, and it's not just a horror show. I think that it's really digging into some deep issues this season, and in welcoming new cast members. Like, I really love Simone Kessel's as Lottie. I think she's really great.
Yeah, I do as well. Joey, what did you think of Yellow Jackets season two, what you've seen so far? Now, you have seen just 3 episodes, right?
Yes.
Okay. What did you think?
I am really down to clown with the season. The thing about it is, I've said this in very generic terms to, well, I've spoken about it offline with you guys. the end of episode two, I'm not going to say what happens, but the end of episode two is one of my favorite. The way that it's directed, absolutely love it. The way it's edited, absolutely love it. The thing that I think is so kind of shocking about this is with the buzz around the show from season one, we know what's going to happen. Like, we know what the overarching thing is that we're not talking about yet is going to happen in terms of, you know, chompy chomp chomp eating.
In terms of survival.
Survival, excuse me. This is like, you know, the now and then version of Alive. I think it's so, I think you can tell that it's very well done by the fact that even though I know in the back of my head where the show is going to go, when stuff starts to like tumble out of control, the fact that it is still shocking to me, I think is a testament to the writing and the performances and the concept and the follow through. I think what Tommy Cypress is doing is fucking great. At least for me, I think it's interesting that they're keeping the four central characters completely separated from each other. So again, there are, I assume they're going to, you know, be pulled back together, obviously, but they're planting other seeds and they're establishing other relationships in a really strong way in order for them to work when they, you know, get pulled back in together. The only thing is there are certain aspects, I think it starts at episode two or three, and I don't know if this is where it's, where stuff is going to go, where I was a little hesitant to, I was like, is it going to go in like a, this is me not knowing, but is it going to go in like a super supernatural direction? I don't know. Maybe you guys can tell me offline if it does or it doesn't. But I'm like on the edge of my seat. Like I'm going to get off this phone and go watch more. It's so good.
It's interesting because I remember when I last season, when I knew that they were going into the supernatural direction, I was like, oh, I don't know how I feel about it. And now I'm like, we still don't know a lot,
I think,
about it. But it's fascinating to me, though, that like, I think it, I really like it now for some reason. It was something that I wouldn't have immediately been like, oh, I want to watch this, but like, I don't want to watch a supernatural show, but I think it really works for this show.
I do as well. And you have to think that the prototype for this in terms of the, you know, look out and watch out for this and look out for that is Lost, right? I mean, it's very similar to Lost in the way that they're kind of unraveling this. I mean, there are no smoke monsters. There's no like secret bunker where there's some guy hitting a button every 8 minutes or whatever, but it has similar rhythms and similar danger zones that lurk within it. But I think that I think that they're learning a bit and they're pacing out their revelations a little bit better than Lost did, because you know, obviously the show came before it.
I would agree with that. Yeah, even like the fact that there are things that like, you can tell they know what they're doing. They know where they want to go. Like thinking about the people that kidnapped Natalie at the end of last season, I didn't realize what they were wearing, but how that would figure into season two. And so they knew then, you know, I'm just impressed with it all. And I really trust in the journey. Whereas with Lost, I always knew you don't know what you're doing. Like I can tell you're spitballing. You're taking us to Jack in Japan just to have an episode where he hooks up with some, you know, or something stupid like that. Here's Nikki and Paolo, two characters who don't figure into the show at all. Granted, those writers had to do 22 episodes on a main network. So this is a little bit different, but, right. But yeah, I still trust in their process.
As you mentioned before, I was a little bit reserved in my reaction to the first couple of episodes, just, you know, because they do the thing that that sometimes kind of annoys me, which Joey, you referred to, which is they separate the characters. And mm-hmm. I felt like, you know, well, what's going on? I don't know that we're really covering any ground here, but what I realized after watching, getting into later episodes, I realized that I just don't have the patience. That it's completely my issue, because they're just gradually building to the conclusion and the revelations that they want. And I think it ultimately, you know, the structure of the first couple of episodes definitely pays off in compelling ways in later episodes.
God.
It has some great needle drops too. Tori Amos is Cornflake Girl. There's some more Tori Amos in episode 3. There's some Veruca Salt, which I really enjoyed. I think that's in episode 2. I've been listening to a lot of 90s music because of, I'm not that I didn't listen to it before, but because of the show, it's like, oh, I love the music of that mid 90s little pocket, like between like 93 and like 96.
And I have to say if you are a fan of the show, watching the opening credit sequence for the show is when it came on for the first time, like I actually out loud was like, yeah, let's go.
It's such a good main title sequence. And I like how a lot of the imagery is different this time.
Yeah. I was wondering if we can you kind of asked about Emmy chances. I was wondering if like the title sequence would be eligible for, Game of Thrones was always eligible when it changed.
Westworld changed just a couple of images and it was always nominated. So I think it's completely eligible for.
Okay.
It's different enough.
The song won't be, but like, obviously the.
Right. It's a great song too.
I wonder if I'm sure it's under rules saying like what percentage of, you know, imagery has to change, but I guess, yeah, fuck you, Westworld. Jesus Christ. Shit, I forgot that. That just put me immediately in a
That leads me to something. So what do you think Clarence, you and I have seen a bulk of it. What do you think the Emmy chances are? I think it's going to be a good Emmy season for it, unless people are grossed out by the show.
Well, yeah, I mean, we have to say that they are taking big swings. It's darker. I don't want to give away anything, but you know, things that you thought would happen are going to happen in this season, and they don't shy away from it. I mean, it's very authentic in whatever way, you know, whatever way that is. And I'm sorry, I'm struggling with the English language here right now because I don't want to spoil what it is, but there's going to be a point where a single shot is going to be very, very polarizing. If you can get past that, I think at the minimum, it repeats its nominations from the last Emmy season, which would be drama series, actress, supporting actress, casting. I don't know if there's, I mean, I guess
it was nominated for writing. It was nominated for writing and directing. And writing. Yeah.
And I think it repeats at least, of course there's some creative, I guess. Yeah, it didn't get much creative. It just mainly was in the primetime categories. At the bare minimum, I see Melanie Lynskey and Christina Ricci still getting in there. You know, does it make room for a Juliette Lewis or Tawny Cypress? Possibly. It just, you know, it really depends. I don't think it's a huge year for drama series. It just depends on the, whether or not the White Lotus, it's that entire cast gets in, you know, because there's a lot of supporting performances there too. I think this is Melanie Lynskey's year to win drama actress.
Yeah.
Based on what I've seen.
I'm really hoping. Yeah.
I read somewhere that people say, her character, Shauna, is like the perfect anti-hero. And she really is. Mm-hmm. She has some great sequences. There's two scenes that Megan, you and I have talked about. One of them is in episode 3. So, Joey, you've seen it, where she...
Begun.
Where she does great stuff. And the writers and the actress are both willing to take this character in unexpected and not entirely positive directions. They're not afraid to show her as a bad person, but you still root for her, thus the anti-hero.
Yeah. And she's really good at playing anti-heroes, which is complicated women that I just love. But I do hope that that she wins this season. I also think that Christina Ricci is really good at you get more insight into Misty this season too, I think.
Yes, she's a little bit less they have toned down her psychotic tendencies a little bit, where she, you know, she's still off kilter, but she's not Kathy Bates this year.
Right.
She's a little
bit. They lean a lot into the comedy.
They do. And I don't know if it's it's not a spoiler because there's a picture of him. Elijah Wood shows up in this season, and they have really great, odd sexual chemistry.
Amazing. Yes, amazing.
And I would love to see Elijah Wood. I don't know how many episodes he's in, but I would love to see him in the guest category.
I would
too. It just depends on how many episodes he's in, of course. But I'd love to see
him
nominated.
Is it 10 episodes again?
It is.
Okay.
I don't know if it can win drama series. Again, I think it's going to be divisive because of some of the choices that they make, but that's okay because that's what the show is. It stays true to itself. And also Succession, final season unexpectedly. So it's going to be hard to beat that.
I'm also hopeful though, because of Everything Everywhere All at Once winning, which is a film that, you know, a year ago we would have been like, oh, it should be up for Best Picture, but it's too weird for Hollywood. And I know it doesn't, like, butt plugs and long hot dog fingers are different than cannibalism, but I still am hopeful that, you know, that there is a fan base. I have to give it up to Yellow Jackets' marketing team. Like, they have not let us forget about this. Like, they've done such a great job. And even like on Instagram, it's like, put add a calendar to when you're going to watch this. Like, I think Showtime's going to have a very good weekend.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they're putting it out. Didn't they decide that they were going to put it out earlier?
Yeah.
It's going to be a digital Friday, but it'll be on TV on Sunday.
Right. Right. Well, you know, and it's not like this is 1985 where everybody's going to watch Succession and nobody will watch Yellow Jackets. Everybody will watch Succession and then they will change, you know, they will bring up streaming and they will watch Yellow Jackets. I mean, come on, you can watch two shows in one night, people.
Right.
Yeah, when people said that about, like, people are going to have to choose between watching the Oscars and the finale of The Last of Us. And I was like, oh okay. We've been doing this for decades, guys.
Like, gee, I wonder if you can watch it the next day. I'm not sure about that.
Oh, no.
Don't make me talk about that show. Anything else on Yellow Jackets? So we talked about its Emmy chances. What do we think? I mean, I guess I don't really see. I agree with you, Megan, that Simone Cassell is Kessel. I don't know how you say her name, but she is very, very good as the adult Lottie. I just think she's kind of an unknown presence. And if Juliette Lewis couldn't get in there last year, I'm not sure she can.
Yeah.
But she's very good. She's much more compelling as an adult Lottie than I thought this character would be.
Yeah. And I think Juliette Lewis is kind of like, I put her as the Tawny Cypress of last year, where I feel like she doesn't have as much to do right now, but I'm thinking, even though she has some great scenes, but I feel like once they all come together, maybe that she'll have some more seat, like, but I feel like Simone Kessel's great.
And I also love another person that it pops up, and I don't know if this is a spoiler either, so we'll just leave it at that because I don't want to ruin it for people, but I love another performance that's come up that's different.
Does she have red?
All right, anything else on Yellow Jackets?
No.
I will say
the one thing about that is that people are going to be like, oh my God, I can't believe they went there. Like, where the fuck did you think the show was going to go, guys?
Right. And that's the thing that makes, as somebody who's in the message boards and people are like, oh, I don't think they'll do this. I don't think they'll do this. And I'm like, okay, they do this. Like, you're going to be upset. But then I also noticed that the show also plays with the fan theories a little bit too, and like, no, we're not doing that. I like how they kind of play with that idea a little bit in some later episodes.
I really hope that people, particularly the Television Academy, can look beyond the shock value and kind of see what the show is doing and what it's talking about, particularly in terms of like female trauma. Not that I'm an expert on female trauma, but you know, particularly when you get to episode six, and I'm not going to spoil anything, so don't worry. But there are some things that I have experience with, even though I'm not a woman, but I'm very close to the events that have happened in that episode, and you know, it's unrelenting. And by the end of that episode, I was watching it at work today during my lunch break, and I was getting teary eyed in the work cafeteria. And I'm like quickly like rubbing my eyes, trying not to cry. But it is devastating, that episode. Like it's emotional torment, as shocking and as hard to watch as that shock moment that you saw, Joey, but in a different way, or that you were talking
about. It also gives you insight into a character that is a bit of a can be a bit of a mystery.
So, all right. Hopefully we've keyed it up enough for you, Joey, and you're just going to spend the rest of your night watching three episodes.
I'm terrified of.
Can you see why I was terrified though after watching the first three, and why I texted you guys at like like probably 3 a.m, like I can't sleep.
I have been I've been having the best sleep lately. I don't know why.
You're into it all.
Yeah. I'm actually did you guys see the Criterion 50% off sale? I'm sure you did, because it's all over film Twitter. Why is Ang Lee's Ride with the Devil on Criterion?
Because of Joel.
Like, I'm just like, why was that put on Criterion? I mean, nobody really. Anyway, sorry.
You're right. That doesn't really make sense.
There's a lot of other movies I think belong there more than Ride with the Devil. I mean, it's not a bad movie. Ooh, Defending Your Life. I just have to remember what I have on Criterion before I go and buy anything. Anyway, sidebar. Sorry about that. So let's jump to the flash forward to the media we're most anticipating the upcoming week. And Joey, why don't you go first?
Sure. I am barreling through a rewatch of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. I'm like three episodes into season four. I have screeners for the final season, so I usually do a rewatch of the whole series before new season comes out, because I'm a loser. Last time I get to do it since it's the final season. I didn't watch the opening scene, but I just wanted to see what. Usually they do like a really cool like opening shot or something for the first moment. And so I saw what it was. I literally was 30 seconds. I was like, what the fuck? And then I closed my laptop. So I was like, I don't want to know what it is. So I'm going to try to get through that. I am going to a wedding this weekend in South Carolina, where it's a gay wedding. And I was telling Megan this, that somebody, we were talking about stuff that we were wearing to our friend Zach's wedding. And it's black tie optional. I am going to wear the same suit that I wore to a Gilded Age event. It's a pale pink suit.
Nice suit.
I'm going to wear a palish thing. I'm going to wear like a mint green button-up shirt, and I have like a watermelon bow tie. So that's what I'm going to wear. And some fucking faggot. That's how you're going to go? I'm going to just be a lot classier than you and just wear a black tuxedo. And I was like, what? He was like, I'm not sure if that's what Zach means by black tie optional. And I was like, it's a suit. Optional. It's a gay wedding in South Carolina. I'm going to proudly wear that. I'm going to take an obnoxious amount of pictures. I'm going to get into pictures with everybody else. So that suit is going to be all over Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. So there's that. I also am dying to get into Swarm, which I've seen a ton of people talking about. Danielle Fishbeck from Judas and the Black Messiah is in it. It's all about like stan culture. It's called Swarm. I think it's about Beyonce and the Bayhive. I don't know.
I heard Malia Obama co-wrote an episode, so I'm excited to watch that. And then I didn't realize I have a screener to Tetris, of all things. So I'm excited to watch that. So that's all. And also just going to watch like all these damn shows, finish Shrinking, finish Up Here, which I didn't know was a musical, original musical.
I feel like that's right up your alley.
Set in 1999.
Yes.
So starring Katie Finneran, who was in like, she'd done a bunch of Broadway shit. So Mae Whitman's in it. So as soon as I was like, oh, this looks cute. Wait.
I love Mae Whitman.
Me too. Her?
Yeah, so, her.
Her. That's all. Kind of shit.
Megan.
I'm looking forward to Succession on Sunday. I'm obviously looking forward to everybody watching Yellow Jackets. I too would like to watch Swarm. That's on my list. I'm looking forward to the second episode of Ted Lasso. I'm reading Chuck Klosterman's the 90s book still. And I'm almost done with it. And it's been really fascinating. I really enjoy it. And then listening to my 90s music. That's been fun. And yeah, that's about it.
Yeah, I didn't know we got Tetris screeners either. Thanks for the email, Apple. But I'm really interested in seeing that. I don't know why everything that Taron Egerton puts out ends up being on Apple these days. But hey, that's okay. But I'm very interested in seeing that. I've heard good things about it. So I am getting to do. Pardon me for the hashtag humble brag for a second. I am getting to do something that is a little bit of a bucket list item this weekend. And I don't know if I can say what it is, so I'm going to wait until I get back.
Oh, I know what it is.
But
this weekend?
Yes. I fly out on Sunday morning at 6 a.m.
Oh, my gosh.
So
yes, I'm excited for you for this.
I, you know.
He's never coming back.
Just scatter my ashes. Scatter my ashes. So... On the way, I'm going to try to catch up with at least one of the other three movies that I was going to try to watch on the cruise, but didn't. Gangs of New York, All About Eve, which I've never seen, and The Apartment, which I've also never seen.
Oh my God! The Apartment's like one of my Megan's favorites. Yeah.
Yeah. I love Billy Wilder. I just don't know why I've just never gotten to it. Also looking forward to Succession on TV. And I just started a new book that I am... immediately hooked on. It is called How to Sell a Haunted House by Grady Hendrix. And it is a, think of it as the Amityville Horror with some heightened family drama in it. And this is kind of what you'll get.
Ooh, I love the cover.
Yeah. It's How to Sell a Haunted House. Essentially. Oh. Yeah. The cover is a great throwback.
I love it. Yeah.
But what
it has like Stranger Things font.
It does. Essentially what it's about is a woman who lives in San Francisco whose parents have died in South Carolina. And she has an estranged brother who she is battling with on the estate and all of that. And their house, a perfectly ordinary sort of brick ranch style house, I'm assuming it's haunted based on the title and the fact that it is a horror book. I'm really hoping they make this into a limited series or a movie because her mother was a Christian puppeteer. And so the house is full of marionette puppet dolls.
Oh my God. That sounds terrifying.
So I'm incredibly excited about, I've just catapulted through like 10 chapters already. So I'm very excited. I highly recommend it so far. It's a true sort of, it'd be a great summer read, but it's a great page turner. So How to Sell a Haunted House by Grady Hendrix. So does that cover it?
Yeah.
All right, let's get the hell out of here. So we are the 3Ms contributors, Joey Moser, Megan McLaughlin, and me, Clarence Boy, thanking you for joining us, asking you to remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find us. Plus, subscribe to our YouTube channel at Awards Daily and wishing you a very pleasant tomorrow.